Everyone has a story. There just needs to be someone willing to listen to that story. I'm Tyler Trent, born and raised in Carmel, Indiana. Been a diehard sports fan for pretty much my entire life. I'm not going to sit here and say life isn't fair to me because I got osteosarcoma three times. And I'd rather go out and do something about it. So. I had told them that, you know, that there wasn't any way that I was going to be kind of missing starting college. In August, a week and 6 days before classes started at Purdue, they removed my pelvis and my hip, February-ish. I started having some pain in my back, and so they did a biopsy on it, found out that it was a third osteosarcoma tumor that was growing on my L3 on my spine. I'm trusting the Lord that whatever the results are, it's what He's got planned for me, and there'll be good that comes out of it no matter what the outcome is. It's hard for me to see anyone else have to go through it. I would never want to put that on someone else. So that's why research is important, because without research, you're never going to find a cure. Maybe my drive revolves around the legacy that I leave. And the fact that, you know, the chances of me living to see cancer eradicated or us finding cure are pretty low. But hopefully, you know, 100 years down the line, you know, maybe my legacy could have an impact towards that. I mean, donate, honestly. Money drives research.
Welcome to the Boyle Sports podcast that we like to call the Handsome Hour. It is special edition, season ending edition. I'm Jay, joined by Boiler Dowd.
How you guys doing?
We talked about how we needed to do a season-ending podcast, and we needed to wrap up the season and talk about Purdue football. And then, of course, as all of you know who are listening, a couple days ago on January 1st, we got very strange, right? How news like that works, right? It was completely inevitable, and we knew it was coming.
Yep.
And yet, it still was crushing, gutting. When Anish messaged all of us in our little group chat when we were talking about it, the first word he used was gutting, gutted, you know, and that we'd lost Tyler. And, you know, my first thought that keeps coming back to me throughout this is that that guy seemed to be able to, you know, he lifted a lot of people up, right? We've talked about that, the team, yep, people he met. It was as though he could make a decision to do something. And, you know, that's what smart guys are able to do, right? They're driven, they're smart. He could kind of do what he wanted within, you know, he had some control over that. And I'm of the opinion that he decided he was needed through the football season and that helped motivate him. And he decided to stick around for the entire football season. And he stuck around through the holidays. You know, he gave his parents and his family something to, you know, remember fondly from this holiday season. You know, they're not going to look back and think, oh, we lost him on December 15th. You know, and we'll always, he was here through the holidays for his family. He was here through the season for the football team. That stuff all meant something to him, and it was as though he decided I've got enough fight in me to do all that. And then, as Van Pelt said, then he got to rest. And that's just what I keep thinking of, is the guy decided he was going to be there for a certain amount of time, even though he knew the fight was, you know, coming to an end. It was as though he was able to push on because he felt like he had a purpose and there was a need.
Well, the account of him leaving reminds me a lot of the whole thing reminds me a lot of the one of the deaths I've been closest to. My grandfather died. It was also inevitable. He'd been very ill, and towards the end, he didn't want to go. We were in the hospital, and I can remember my mom just kept saying, "It's okay. It's okay. You can go now. You know, everybody's fine." And it sounds like he kind of faded out, came back, fade out. And I can, and Tyler specifically, he was the amazing thing is he was still like, I talked about this, my thoughts about him is that he was still setting goals less than a week out.
Yeah, to the very end. The book, the trips, these fun, you know, he let us all in. They all let us all in, his whole family.
Yep.
Don't think you can
overstate that. That's a key point, letting us in. Yeah.
They shared, not just Tyler. I thanked his family on Twitter, and I didn't just say thanks for sharing Tyler with us. His Ethan, his brother, his parents, his family gatherings, that was all shared with all of us. And that is, I said to my wife, that is, if you're going through that, it's natural to say, I want to spend my time with us together and find a way to just enjoy the final weeks. And they went out of their way to share their message and him and his goals and all, you know, think of how many pictures there were of his family during one of the hardest times of their lives, and of Tyler looking probably the worst he's ever looked, yet he would get in front of a camera with people and meet people and go on TV because he knew, right? He knew we needed it. And he knew that it was something he could do for us.
I think he saw it as David Blau said, he didn't want to waste cancer, which is the weirdest thing any human being's ever said. But it's absolutely
waste anything.
He didn't want to waste anything. He saw the impact that he possibly could make on research. And I have friends that aren't big Purdue fans and haven't been following the story very much, but they know Tyler's story because he was on BBC when he died. The story was reported by BBC. How about that?
Amazing.
Amazing. The impact is amazing. It's long. It's wide. The what he wanted to do is he wanted to stop the next person from suffering.
Mm-hmm.
So he wanted to wait, you know, raise money and awareness so people would give, and they did. My brother has an excellent perspective on what you're saying about the idea of them sharing their lives and sharing the suffering and sharing the hope at the same time. One of the things that's great about this, okay, and his parents, you and I have gotten to know them. His dad and I were texting last night, and they have a documentation. They can go back whenever they want to remember their son, and they can look in 4 seconds on YouTube and find thousands of different videos mm-hmm. of what he said, what he stood for, what other people thought of. Think about how much of a blessing that is, because there's something that obviously we're living in an amazingly documented age, but I think about this all the time. One of the people that I lost that I would have loved to just kind of been, I still would love to be able to kind of get in a zone and think about what would this guy have done in this situation. I kind of need to be triggered and remember the way he thought. His parents can do that. His brother can do that. You know, his brother's an eighth grader, Ethan, and I think Blake is a senior in high school. And those guys can go back and say, this is the guy that everybody rallied around. I want to say one other thing too, because I have been hitting this idea hard too. And I don't know if Ethan specifically, because he and I've interacted a couple times, I don't know if they ever listen to this podcast, but if they do, or if any friends of theirs do, I would like to make sure that they understand this. I'd like to make sure that Tyler's roommates understand this. Obviously his parents, but those people, the ancillary characters of Tyler's story, are amazing human beings. To be an eighth grader and to step aside over and over and over and just be kind of a background guy, it's got to be hard. I don't care which personality you are. In eighth grade, you know, even if you're an awkward kid, you still kind of want to go, hey, hi, mom, get in front of the camera and goof off. I never saw Ethan do that. I saw him with some stupid grins on his face when Purdue was winning. He was wheeling his brother around. But I never saw any of that, him wanting the foreground.
Right.
And his roommates, which we got to meet, I think, two. They're incredible people. All these people did, kind of giving him more and more places to talk and more, you know, I never saw any of these guys lean into a camera frame ever. Mm-hmm. Did you?
No.
And the funny thing is, one of his roommates, I think, is in that kind of famous picture where Tyler's in the overalls and his roommate is painted gold. I think that might be one of the guys we met.
Mm-hmm.
That's like the only picture anybody knows about that group. And these guys, and gosh, I love these people. I keep saying to his dad, I know it must be bizarre because I've met his dad twice and we've texted and we've emailed, but we really don't know each other that well. But I keep telling him I love him and I love his family.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean it. I love these people. I love the fact that they have been so steadfast for their son. I love the fact, and you can, they've been so selfless. They've been so selfless and they've encouraged and they've welcomed us into their lives. It's just an incredible thing.
It really is. There's a couple other things about this that have resonated with me or that I've been thinking about. And I think, you were talking about the selflessness, I think is one of the words that I would use to describe what you were just saying about the friends and brothers. And I mean, Tyler posted that one picture. They all got they got those T2 tattoos.
Yeah.
They got the T2 logo.
T2 tattoos.
You know, that's one of the things we've seen. Right. And, you know, being selfless is hard. And I don't even mean hard, like just because it's easier to be selfish. It's hard to do truly selfless things. And, you know, you had said something. I was re-listening to some of our podcast after the Ohio State game when, you know, it was a very emotional week talking about Tyler. We thought it was almost over then. And the guy, as usual.
His parents the week before.
They said that, yeah. That was his last visit to Purdue. I mean, and as usual, it's a guy like that who always surprises you and always exceeds expectations. That's one of the things I love that'll be, I hope remembered, is that he constantly kept surprising and exceeding, and his grace was something that we don't have that at more than twice his age and in perfect health. And this guy, you know, had it in a way that it's surreal for a 20-year-old. But you said something in that podcast. You said one of the things you say to your kids in relation to this kind of stuff is, what do you want to be remembered for? And I think the way I phrase it when you and I were talking was, what do you want your legacy to be? However you want to say it. I think it's important for all of us, if you're listening to this or if you listen to anything we say, I think it's important. I've always felt that finding something to make a difference in your life, and I know you feel this way too, but like not being lazy, and being lazy is fun for sure, but like, don't just do things that, like, you know, are self-gratifying, you know, or you know, things that you enjoy doing. Like find ways to get involved, like volunteer, you know, donate. You know, people talk about raising money, and yeah, if you can do that, great. But not everybody has money to donate, and that's totally fine too. You can always get involved. Like, there are things you can do, and it doesn't have to be something over the top. Like, you don't need to find a cure for cancer, right? But I was thinking, but what Michael said in his post, he said, if I'm a little better and you're a little better and we each do a little bit, then won't that make things better? Won't things be better off if we're all trying a little harder to do a few things? Yeah. Like, find a way to go make a difference. Expand on what's important to you. That doesn't have to be, like I said, you don't have to raise money for cancer, but like, volunteer at a shelter. Volunteer, right. go to church.
How about you this?
Go to a shelter and say, I want to help. I want to make a difference so my community is a tiny bit better, right?
I've got a young guy that I'm friends with. He's in his late 20s, and he coaches Little League baseball and basketball, has no kids.
I knew a guy like that when I was a kid, and it's great.
It's awesome.
It's yeah. I knew a guy like that, and I remember thinking, "Who's his kid here?" My dad was like, right. "He doesn't. He just wants the coach."
Yeah.
Like, that's a great example. Youth sports.
And I can
like,
tell you this much, as Jay and I can tell you, as two dads, when you go to sign your kids up, you always get wrangled into coaching, even if you don't want to, if you at all believe that you should be there. So it's like having a kid there. I know, me too. And having a coach that wants to be there, who has no attachment to the kids, that's incredible. That's awesome.
And there's nothing stopping you. You know, like, I think people worry about, you know, oh, my life's busy, or, you know, you and I, we've known people over the years who, you know, I don't want to get specific, but we knew a guy once who would say, you know, was going to write for the site. And he was like, oh, I'm just really busy right now. And he was like right out of college. And you and I were like, oh, yeah,
what's that like?
Really?
How do you?
You don't have kids or a job or a wife, right? You're just, what are you busy with exactly? Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's fine. It's fine. Everybody has their own perceptions and sense of and what overwhelms them. You learn your capacity can get a lot greater as right. more gets piled onto you, but people worry, and I we all do it. You know, you think about, can I take on something else? And the answer is, you actually can. Like, you can take on more because you'll find the room. Like, my father said to me years ago, and has always stuck with me, he said, you will make time for what's important. And mm-hmm. everyone does that. And it's a great perspective to keep in mind. Like, when you find a way to record a dopey podcast and you don't find time to rake your leaves, well, you decided what was more important. Mm-hmm. And that's right. Like, you do that every day. You have to prioritize. Otherwise, you'll never get out of the house. So you can find a way to fit things in. Maybe it means less sleep. Maybe it means you don't work out as often as you'd like.
I was just going to say that, to me, as I've gotten older, working out isn't very gratifying. I'm not very good at it anymore. I'm not very strong, right? So the last 5-7 years, it keeps falling down wrong.
Eating
right?
or drinking whiskey, on the other hand.
Seems like it always has time. I always have time.
You're excellent at it, too. You do it so well.
I'm really good.
But I think my point is, if you look at something and you're like, man, that sounds like a commitment. I'm worried yeah. about it. And not in a jerky way. Like, you know, I don't want people down. You know what? There's also a commercial out there, a bit that's running about foster parents. Mm-hmm. And it shows the parent being a clown like you or me and screwing something up.
Right.
And it says, they don't need perfection. They need you.
Yeah. Like, yep.
The same is true of any volunteer organization or outfit or anywhere you can give your time or raise awareness about something or make people feel better or do something people need. Like, if you can give a little bit of your time or your energy or your money, that will make a difference. And that is a way, what I'm getting in my ramble here, that is a way I think you can honor the memory of someone like Tyler Trent, who spent a huge bulk of his life. He was an adult for 2 years he got as an, you know, he spent his life doing stuff for people and bettering, seriously bettering the world around him. Like, and here, how about this? Anish made a point to you and I in September, when we all went to the Missouri game, mm-hmm. we were worried that not enough people knew Tyler's story. We were all like, gosh, he said to me, he goes, I wish we could get, he actually said to me that weekend, he goes, do you guys interact with Scott Van Pelt? And I was like, well, once in a while, he doesn't follow us. We can't like message him that way. Mm-hmm. And he goes, I would like, he said this weekend. I don't know if I ever told you that. He said that weekend to me, I want to get his story to Van Pelt. He goes, he said to me, and I want Tyler to see it. That was what Anish said to me behind the scenes, right? Within not long, that story blew up nationally, when obviously leading up to October, to the game. Right. Then Van Pelt has him on. And I remember thinking, gosh, I'm so glad. And to that point, I want Tyler to see it. One of the other things that he got to experience over these last 2-3 months, he got to see what everyone felt about him and the impact he was making. A lot of times people don't get that, right? The impact is realized late and after they're gone. He got several months of national impact, receiving awards, touching players throughout the NCAA. When he went to that awards thing in Florida,
Lincoln Riley was hanging on his word, right?
Lincoln Riley, Dabo Swinney sent him an autographed thing, then came over to meet him in person. Tyler Murray.
Yeah.
Kyler Murray. Stitt, right? From
Bob Stitt.
I'm gonna screw up his name. No, the guy from the quarterback that just ruined Purdue.
Oh, Stidham.
Like, he met all these guys, and they were all genuinely.
I use coach. I use
Tom Allen, classy guy, like what, like when
Robbie Langford. I mean,
like guys who have no interest in Purdue, and they were all moved by him. And having that kind of impact is just, gosh, and to see you had it, to know, to get to know that, I think is a gift as well that he was able to. So I know I'm talking a lot. Well, this is my therapy. This is much cheaper than
no. It's a good therapy. It's extremely real. And I mean, you guys don't know this. Jay has had another loss in his family recently, and I think this stuff is absolutely imperative. If if you guys have struggled with this, I've read people on Twitter. The funny thing that maybe it's not funny, but that I'm not crying, you're crying thing, or. Yeah. It's okay, guys. It's okay. Yeah. It's okay to be saddened by this, even if you've never met him. It really is, because you probably feel like you've met him, because what you got to see is you got to see the best version of a human being who was already pretty good.
Right.
You got to see some really good stuff. You know, everything was filtered out. His parents told us, and he told us, it wasn't always good. And he had horrible days. And, so you got to see an idealistic view of a person. He's a human, though. He had bad days. He acted like a jerk. He had his downfalls. I'm sure his brothers could tell you plenty of stories where he just acted like a big brother. And what I've been intrigued by is that here's what I know of Tyler. I know of 2 years, right? We've been interacting with him for, is it not even 2 years, right? A year and a half?
Probably not a year and a half, maybe, yeah.
Okay. So what we know is a very tight window of this man's life, right? He didn't live very long, but what we know is even less. So I've been intrigued by the idea, and I'm always intrigued by this. All I know of Jay Money's life starts at 17, 18. Okay. So I don't remember the really formative stuff. I'd never saw it. Same with him, with me, same thing. And that's what you get to see. So I've been intrigued by the idea of what was he like before this happened. And one of the things I find, because I've gone around, there's a girl on Twitter who has been retweeted by Tyler's dad and his mom, who says, "Miss you already, grew up with you, and too soon." And so there's all these pictures of him in a group, and he was homeschooled when he was young. And I think this was either a homeschool organization or a church group, whatever. And I've been looking at pictures of him growing up, and he was a clown, clearly.
Yes.
Right. He was just a goofball. And we didn't get to see the goofball side because that part kind of got stripped away. Right. Mm-hmm. I think he thought there's a time and place for that later, you know, but I'm not going to do it right now when I'm given this stage, obviously, which is funny. I think when you have limited, think about this. If you got put on national TV at 18 years old, 19 years old, 20 years old, and you are completely healthy and a camera shoved in your face and you had a chance to say something, you'd say something stupid. My brother said something stupid at the Purdue versus K-State Bowl. He got interviewed by local news, and I think he remembers. He talked trash about Kansas State fans talking trash about Purdue. He said something stupid. He had his platform, and he did something dumb with it, right? That's kind of what we do, right? Yeah. But what we got to see is, like you said, smart guy who he knew how to craft this message, and it was real too. That's the neat thing. But there was more to him that I'm still going to be intrigued by for a long time, just because the chapter was too short. And I'm just damn appreciative, and can't say that enough. If you guys don't know it, if you feel like you want to pay more respects, his funeral will be next Tuesday at College Park Church, just north of Indianapolis. And I think it's at 6. I would suggest getting there before 6. I think it's going to be crowded. But the other thing, if you can't make it, you can watch a simulcast, which is awesome. And you will feel like you're there, I'm sure. It's a great time to be alive, great time to see things like this. And I am positive this story continues to play out for months. We're going to get to see a lot on Twitter. We're going to find out new things because it is so well documented, and because his book's going to come out. Exactly. You can pre-order that. I think it's $24. That's money well spent.
I liked some of the other ideas I saw people suggesting. Someone suggested, you know, referring to an area with by his name, you know, Tyler Town or something like a tailgating area. I think that'd be fun.
Did this get suggested? I love that idea. I love calling the student section Tyler Town, Trent Town, Tyler, whatever. But one idea I saw was him with the tent by the gate as a statue. But what about this? This is, and I don't know if anybody sees this, because if they did, I apologize. But what about a permanent statue in the front of the student section with his arm over the railing, sitting in the student section, yeah, that front row?
I haven't seen that suggested.
That'd okay. I thought about it because I think that picture is pretty iconic. There are like 10 pictures, I think, that most Purdue fans know that's Tyler, right? And so one of them is his – it's when he was a freshman, I think, and he's sitting in the front of the student section, his arms on that railing. I think it would be just so cool to have that be the statue of him, because it's hard – so here are the things that, to me, that define the man, right? Obviously, cancer is a big part of his story, right? Take a half step back. Purdue is a big part of his story. Faith is a big part of his story. All these things, it's hard to pull one part and just choose, I'm going to ignore that. You can't really ignore it. And he made that, made you sure that you understood all these things went together, right? There was a, his family and friends mattered. All these things mattered. But I think definitively, one thing it's I don't know how to say this delicately, but when someone dies young, they're young forever.
Yes. Yeah.
Right? Our memory is going to be a 20-year-old man, right?
Yes.
Which is pretty great for, you know, but to remember him that way. It's horrible. I am not, I hope everybody understands. Please don't take anything out of context that I'm not, I don't, you know, there's nothing in me that thinks it's great about losing a child. My parents-in-law lost a young child. And I told that story to Michael off the air last night. You already know it. He was much younger. He's three. But it's heartbreaking. It's horrible. Parents should never have to do that, but many, many parents do.
My family's got tragedy throughout its history. And when I was a freshman in high school, I was 14, 15. I had a 10-year-old cousin who rode out, his grandmother was watching him, and he rode out his bicycle into the road and got hit by a 17-year-old driver and was killed. And I was at the cemetery earlier in December. My son and I took him to do the Wreaths Across America tradition. And this cemetery that we went to is in my hometown, which the trivia about it is it was my family only about 150 years ago. Whoa. And then it's become, my family has been in that town for a long time, a little too long.
Was it their property or something at some point?
Yeah, it was theirs originally. And it was just the family cemetery. And then it became the town cemetery. But I was showing him some family members, and we came across that one. And he's still, what they did was they did a headstone that's got a rendering of him at 10 years old. And I thought that every time I've seen that headstone, I think the same thing. Like, they still put little toys on it. Like, he died in 1990. And like, he's forever a 10-year-old boy to them.
Yep.
And so I don't think there's anything strange about what you're saying, because anyone who's lost someone young, whether it's 10 or 20 or 30, you're not an old doddering man.
Right.
You're remembered as you were at the end. And sometimes, you know, I'm not going to say it's better, but I think there's something you'll remember him so fondly, especially the people who knew him before he was as sick as he was.
Yeah.
You remember this young guy rather than someone who's 100, you know? Yeah. And obviously everyone would trade, you know, having him back and seeing him grow old, because he's the kind of guy he's the kind of guy that you'd learn, you know, he'd turn into something that you'd be like,
he
cured that. He invented that. Oh, how about that? That's not a surprise. This is a guy who got near perfect SATs and was literally accumulated enough credits to have a degree after like a year and a month.
Yeah. He went back to school to become a nuclear physicist. Look at that.
How about that? He's doing something important. And here we are not.
Exactly. Yeah. Here I am still doing the same thing.
Making many dollars off this podcast.
That's right. Many monies.
The only other thing I think, not the only other thing, but one of the other things I think worth talking about too, is just the impact that, you know, we were talking about the things that stuck with us, and the things that kept coming to mind. You know, the Scott Van Pelt sign off, you and I both, and my wife, not that she's necessarily a part of our show here that our listeners would know, but you know how, you know, they're not as connected to sports as we are. And she said that was the hardest one for her to watch. All the little video tributes she's seen, for some reason, she said that one was so hard. And I was like, well, first of all, SVP is great. That's part of it. He knows the exact tone to strike in any, and it's always so genuine, right? That's part of it. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't polished the way that like a lot of broadcasters would be, you know. It was clearly emotional to him. But I also get struck by the, you know, the videos of the way the team loved him. And I put that on Twitter the night that the Tyler passed, because I could barely get the words out even in typing. But like that video that they put up, sort of the Rinaldi summation, because the Rinaldi created a final version, final cut, because he hadn't, you know, shredded us enough. So thanks, Tom, for that. But they knew exactly where to turn the audio back on, like in the locker room, of course, right?
Oh, yeah.
DJ comes in, and we talked about it the night that happened. You said, I remember, I recently listened to that again. You said, DJ is a little guy, plays like he's got a chip on his shoulder because he's a little guy, always has had to deal with that.
Yeah.
But when he's off the field, he always seems to be in a good mood. And when he sees Tyler, he grins. He was quoted this week as saying that was the highlight of his Purdue football career. He's delivering the game ball to Tyler. He said, I got a lot of things, but I think that's the number one thing. And he wasn't making that up, everybody. Like, he said, I didn't feel worthy of bringing that to him. I didn't feel like I was, you know, I should have been the one to do that. I was like, And when he walks in after the Ohio State game, he shakes his hand. And you've seen that, right? Where he says, thank you.
Yeah.
Right. There's not like he stops and he goes, thank you. Thank you. And like, Shopper hugs him and comes in and hugs him. There's a player whose number is obscured and I don't know who it is. I think he has a helmet on and he's saying, I feel like I can do anything because of you.
Oh, like it's Terry Wright, isn't it?
Was it Terry Wright? Okay.
I thought so.
I couldn't tell who it was. Brom kissing him on the head. You pulled that one out a while ago where you were like, that's not the kind of guy Brom is, right?
Well, what I'm learning about Brom is that he shows you what he wants to show you. And what I'm also learning is he's a man who has a pretty strong faith that it's not a public faith. He believes that should be something that's in private. Everybody has different views on faith and belief, but Brahm has said some things that are extremely deep, that are extremely faith filled, and he's typed them. And they've been very moving to me because he doesn't talk about it all the time, right? You know, that's a different. Right. You have David Blau, who right away, he's going to tell you right away what he's thinking about faith and his faith journey and whatever you want to say it. And then you have Coach Brom, who's, you know, on the other end of the spectrum. But they all genuinely care for him. I think the funny thing is there are guys on that group, too, that faith is not in the forefront, but this is this whole story has been just extremely important to him. A lot of players there and a lot of you out there too. Faith is not, I mean, as a Christian, as a person of faith, I hope his faith has been a tangible example of what it should look like. That's one thing. If I aspire to anything as a Christian, it's that people don't think I'm full of crap. And because I think there's, and I've been, and I thought of this actually. I was watching as I edit my video cast often. I see that there's a cross over my shoulder in my office. Okay, and there's a cross over a couple over the door coming a couple rooms in my house. And in the most recent video podcast, I get angry at a football team that I love. It, none of that makes it right. I mean, I think anybody who doesn't
become vengeance.
Exactly. Rain down hellfire doesn't make any sense.
What do you mean? Because you're not a perfect Christian? Isn't that the whole idea is that you're constantly striving to be better and improving and you're never perfect?
Absolutely. And you know me well enough, Jay, that I am.
You rarely get angry. Let's be honest.
I have a horrible temper. I have many things that I am that are not what I'm supposed to be as a Christian and as a person. And I'm working on them, but I hope I don't ever represent it to the point that someone doesn't want to become a believer because of my behavior. And so that's a big thing. That's a big mantle, honestly. you can edit this out if you want to or not.
I edit most of you out. Yes.
Okay. That's good. I had a friend, a very good friend that you actually know, Jay, and I will not mention him by name here, but we played church league basketball together when we got out of college. This might be the same person.
Art Vandelay. No, sorry.
Art Vandelay.
Who gets that joke?
Yes, exactly. Latex. We're good with the 25-year-old references. We played in a church league together, and there was a guy that was on the other team after one game, and we got beaten up by this team. Like, we really lost big, and they were kind of rubbing our face in it. But at one point, this guy goes up for a shot, comes down, rolls his ankle or hurts his knee, can't remember, and he smacks the pad behind the wall. We're in a church gym. This guy is the biggest rah-rah church guy there, you know, and he just yells, GD, yells it. And then a minute later, somebody tries to help him up, and he won't take it. He like throws a fit. He's mad. And so, like I said, we lost big. We lost by 20 points in a church league game. We're driving home, and we haven't said anything. My buddy and I haven't said it. We've known each other since freshman year in high school. And it's quiet in the car, and he says, I'll tell you what, if that guy is what being a Christian is all about, I don't want to be part of it. Mm. And he was not a believer when we were playing that. I don't think of much a believer anyway. And I said, I get it. It's a fair point. So that's a hell of a sidebar. And
story's about you, right? No, I'm just
the story is, yeah, exactly. I'm the angry man
this in friend the story. Of mine. No, the way you described it, we were getting destroyed. They were rubbing our noses. And I thought you were going to say the guy's name was Gus Malzahn. I thought that was.
Okay, here's an interesting. I think we can. Can we switch gears a little bit. And if you've stayed through the podcast so far, number one.
God bless you.
God bless you. That was a lot. That was heavy stuff. Heaviest. And that's what we should put that. I hope you put that in the title. Tune in for the heaviest handsome hour ever.
A very special blossom.
Exactly. A blossom you can't. There you go. That's another good
blossom
you can't afford to miss.
Remember those promos? Yeah. It would always be like a very special blossom.
Oh, ridiculous.
What a name, too. I mean, there's so many connotations.
Oh, yeah. Well, they did that on purpose.
Do you think so?
Yes. Every episode was about something STD
coming
related.
Right.
Or, I mean, seriously, they.
Apparently you watched, but I didn't.
Too much. I watched just because Joey Lawrence was smoking. What? What just happened? See, there I go again.
I blacked out. What was that?
Yeah, what? Oh.
Anyway, you wanted to transition. Do you want to transition to the trucking that went on in Nashville?
Let's do that. Okay.
Let's start with how great Purdue's. Let's start with the good because it's going to be a shorter conversation. Purdue's fans showed out. Of all the non-New Year's Six or playoff bowl games, so non-huge bowl games, yeah. Right? Fair. Mm-hmm. I saw the top 10 or maybe only 10, whatever it is, attendance in Purdue. I believe the Purdue-Auburn game was number 2. 59,000 people at a bowl game. And Purdue fans were all over Nashville. Like,
it was great.
Where? Like, owning every bar, doing fight songs in bars. There were Purdue flags outside of bars.
Outside
on
of
Broadway.
Bars, yeah. They were pandering to us. It was fantastic. Gosh,
and that's about
that's
all.
It. That's the positive.
That was good.
Uniforms, and then we went home. The uniforms look nice.
The uniforms look good. White continues to be a problem.
Oh, it's
at least they weren't white helmets.
Yeah, but weren't they wearing the urinated pants. White pants?
The gold pants.
I always say those pants aren't really gold. Those are white pants that someone has peed upon. It's a horrible gold. I mean, we know gold pants. Drew Brees wore metallic gold pants.
And the gold on the black jerseys looks so good.
Oh, yeah.
And the gold on the matte gold helmets looks really good. Like, right. So it's weird, right, that those pants are not the same as the
it can't be the same pants they wear.
On the black shirts, the gold numbers on the black shirts are really nice. They look like the Saints gold almost.
Well, here's this. Okay, so you have alluded to this a couple times, and I'm a guy who likes sports uniforms. I'm a guy who likes all the trappings of that. But one thing that everyone knows is that the NFL uniforms are provided by Nike right now. The Saints are a Nike team, right? Mm-hmm. So That gold pant is available right now to Purdue if they request. So here's what you do. Ready? I want the equipment manager.
Coach Brahm's listening.
His name's Mike. Yeah, Coach Brahm's always listening. Call Nike and say, we want the Saints uniforms without their stripes on the side and a train where the NFL logo is. Ta-da! And I've done it. I've done it. Victory! They would be incredible uniforms. You said it. The Saints uniforms, by the way, Drew Brees brought the black pant, white jersey to the Saints. I'm almost positive he took that from Purdue and he had pull, and that's maybe.
So you would have been okay. You like the black pants, white jersey.
I like it. I like it. So to me, okay, the little trick with uniforms is that when you win a lot of games in them, they become better.
Hmm.
Okay.
Well,
and Drew Brees won games in that black pant, white jersey combo at Purdue, yes, with the gold helmet.
And to that point, when those Purdue uniforms that Brees wore most of his time there,
right,
came out, we were in school, and I remember players that were in classes either of ours or friends of ours complaining. I actually remember guys complaining about those uniforms. They didn't think they were very cool. And then Purdue was really good in them, and now we all look back at those, and we're like, but if you look at it just as for the aesthetics, they're okay. I don't think they're gorgeous uniforms.
Those jerseys and those pants, there's another Wyoming derivative. Those came from Wyoming.
Yes, those thick stripes on the sleeve.
Yes, that number, the outline number.
The very old varsity font number, whatever you call that.
Collegiate font. Yep. Yeah, that's but if you look at Wyoming's uniforms the previous year when Joe Tiller was there, they are the same, except it's brown instead of black. So that's a funny thing. I think we don't think much about things like that. But that's what coaches do, though. I mean, that's the chrome helmets at Purdue are the chrome helmets from Western Kentucky, except they were red. He liked chrome helmets at Western Kentucky, and I think they played well in them. I think they won, 11 games?
Mm-hmm.
If Purdue would win 11 games, I think we'd all say, sure, those powder pink helmets are amazing. Never get rid of the powder pink.
I don't think they wore, since we're talking about uniforms.
Sure.
I'll have to go back and look. And now
easier than talking about the game, by the way.
Absolutely. Our old buddy Teddy Huff has a Purdue uniforms Twitter feed, which good for him. It's the kind of thing you and I like. Mm-hmm. He's been tracking the uniform combos for years for Purdue. And he was like, I finally made a Twitter. I was like, yeah, that's perfect. Mm-hmm. But we could go check. But I don't know that they wore the black helmets this year very much. And you had heard before the season through a source that they weren't going to wear them at all.
Yeah.
And they did. And then they wore them against Ohio State. I think that's the last time they wore them.
Yeah. The person I heard from was the equipment manager. And I don't know if he was just saying, well, he wanted to keep things close to the vest. I don't think it's true. I think it's the captains, the seniors said, hey, we want to wear these for this game, right?
He also said the clones were going away.
He did say that too. Yeah. I think he may have also been, like a information minister in Iraq during
disinformation the Cold War campaign. Exactly. Yes. You know what I think has gone away?
The great Satan is being turned back, and we will never wear gold chrome helmets again.
I
nailed that.
One thing I think we can say with confidence is they did retire the white helmets.
Oh yeah, they're gone. They're gone. That's two seasons. There's no white helmets. So yeah, they're very gone. And I think that's one thing. So you know who I am about black helmets, because I think of Fred Akers with black helmets. That's because
Daryl Hazel.
right. And so that's not good. Okay. But they've won games now in black helmets. I can understand people saying, okay, we can move away from that. The train track stripe.
That is awesome. It's still awesome.
But it's still from an era that's not great.
Well,
so but here's the thing. The black helmets are Akers, the white helmets are
Hazel.
Daryl Hazel. I mean, that's it. So that's what some coach in the future will bring back a white helmet for 4 minutes and Purdue will get beaten by 100. It'll probably be white helmet, white jersey, white pants. White jersey, white pants has not been, I think they said we won a game in white jersey, white pants this year. But I said right away, I brought up the last time that worked was when Jim Everett was playing.
I think it was last year. Didn't they go white when they beat the crap out of Missouri? I feel like they might have. I feel like that might have been the one.
Maybe they've won two games in that combination. So when I think of the white-white combination, I think of Kyle Orton's Michigan team getting beaten by a million in Ann Arbor. Because I was in that game right when they came in all whites. It was a rainy, drizzly day, and you could see through the uniforms.
No.
Oh, this is bad. Everything's bad. Why? Yeah, so they did not have – see, this is a reference that I always – they did not have a big house through the P, like with the rose through the P, to let them know we're just here to be here, just participation.
So, let me just quickly correct myself. No, that Missouri game, they did chrome helmets.
Okay.
White jerseys, black pants, black number. Okay. Looks really good.
Nice. That's sharp, man.
And by the way, I don't want to lose that point there. You said you were talking about that. I brought that up, that helmet, because as you know, my mini helmet collection continues to grow. And one I don't actually have of mini helmets, because they're harder to find, is the Rose Bowl helmet. And I made a comment about it, and I was talking to my son and my wife about it. And of course, my wife was like, "Why don't I understand? What's wrong with celebrating the family?" I'm like, because it's like, yay, we're season's up, accomplishment made.
Right. We've done it.
Everyone have fun.
And I had somebody say, "But they have patches that have rose." I'm like, "No, you have to have patches on it that have the Rose Bowl on it. That's a different deal. Putting the rose through the logo, and other programs have done it. I know that.
You're altering your logo, though.
I think, yes. I think Washington State, which is funny because Tiller chose to put the rose through the P. His buddy Mike Price put the rose through the Cougars or the,
nostril.
I don't know.
Nostril.
Yeah, exactly.
Washington State was in the Rose Bowl?
Yeah, with Leaf. I believe they were in the Rose Bowl.
Oh, that sounds right.
So yeah. I'm not going to check. So, okay, but let's talk about Purdue football. So Purdue football – they ended poorly. That was, and I.
It was a nice day. It was pretty a
beautiful
out.
Day.
Sunny.
Beautiful day. Nice day for a walk.
With a across the bridge back to your car.
Yeah, it was rough. It was rough. And so I'm kind of, because I've already gone through the mental gymnastics of if Purdue goes to a certain level of bowl game next year, will I go? You know, I'm not prone to spend a lot of money generally unless it's like on
what?
Yeah. Unless it's on like a car. I like cars. But even then I try to get the cheapest version of it. Yeah, it's not that really. But the
bourbon.
But bourbon I don't go above.
You like to go cheap bourbon too, just as long as it's good.
I do. And so by the way, I've got another one, Larceny. That is a good and expensive bourbon. So one day we're going to get paid for this. anyhow, that's by the way, right now. So what I like to do, just a sidebar, and Jay and I are, I think he likes Double Oak Woodford.
Yeah.
That's a good one. And I've not been able to be brave enough to buy it yet because of the cost. Okay. It keeps me from it. Because every time it's over 50, it's 65 sometimes.
Yeah. The cheap place, it's 50. Yeah. 48.
And I saw it for $47, and I still didn't get it. Should have gotten it. I know. But right now, I've got seven bottles that are like between a fifth of the bottle left and half of the bottle left. Because I have friends over that drink. I'm like, hey, try this, and I'll try. I say, okay, I taste this. Tell me what you taste, and I'll walk them through it. My wife was like, "Is this ridiculous?" I said, "Yeah, kind of." I said, "But I'm not drinking much of it. If it would be more ridiculous if I just had a bunch of empty bottles in the trash can, right? That would." So, anyway.
Yeah, a bunch of half-empty bottles.
Yeah, it's fine.
Eight half-empty bottles is not the same as four empty bottles.
No. Am I a bourbon bottle is half-empty or half-full guy?
Well, I'll tell you, that game. So, a special shout-out to our friend Mike, Pew Falls Cities, for showing up at the Purdue Club of Nashville, and big shouts to them too for throwing a tailgate where it was free. And they said, first come, first serve, have food. And people were eating. And that was very, very good of them. Very neighborly of them.
The only thing that was hard to find was soft drinks for LBD and
for non-alcoholic beverages. Yes. Were hard to find. But so they did that. He showed up there and he just kept walking up to us. And he's like, here, I've got a couple. And he was messaging us, if anyone's coming through Louisville, swing by, I'll give you another bottle. It's like, dude. All right, already. Just if you want my number, just ask for it. No, that's not.
Yes, he does.
No, it was wonderful. He gave us some Old Forester. Again, we'll get paid for this one day. And right, that's what we had in the stands. And not in the stands, because that you're not allowed to bring it in.
No, it was not in the stands.
That was actually what was great was Anisha's bottle was gone during the tailgate, and I had mine in my back pocket because it was the fifth, so it was like a flask size. And I'm walking along, and all of a sudden, I was
doesn't it say fun size on the bottle?
Isn't that your description? We're walking in, and it was interesting. A couple of Anisha's friends were very concerned with me making sure I got through the security to get in. I was like, that's nice of them. Then I realized it's not selfless. They want it to make its way in for other reasons.
Right.
They want some of my delicious bourbon.
Exactly.
So I put it in the front of my pants and then used my son as a shield.
I can vouch for this. This happened. I was right there.
Run interference with the very large security gentleman.
And the funniest thing about that is Jay Money's son got the random wand treatment and Jay slid right by it. And that really happened. So they gave the metal detector treatment to the 9-year-old.
Yeah. Well, it's.
But not to the dirty old man
with a big bowl
right behind him.
We're Jersey, man. We're running a game on people. You got to start them young, you know?
Great. The good thing is at one point there were iterations of using J Money's son's sweatshirt as the vehicle for that would have been too far. That didn't happen. So that's excellent.
I think that would have been arguably illegal.
Yes, I absolutely think that's illegal. Yes. I don't think there's any arguable. It's just delicious.
So we're talking about the alcohol because Purdue went down 21-0. So what's amazing is they went down 28-7. Before that, we started the joke in our section became Purdue's a second half team. And you can imagine how that joke was still working really well when it was 56-7 at halftime.
Right.
Don't worry, Purdue's a second half team. But to give up 28 in the first quarter, you definitely, when you see, you ever look at the line score of any game and you see 28 and you're like, what the hell happened?
Exactly.
That's hard to do, right?
Yeah.
But that happened in both of the first two quarters. Like, it was, and somebody said to me, like, some of my coworkers were like, what happened though? I was like, you know, Purdue had a turnover or like one early interception, but it wasn't like it was four picks or something. It was just,
They had a pick six, right? That was batted up in the air.
One, but that's one of seven touchdowns or whatever the hell it was. Like,
so here's the thing. I have not looked at the box score. I have not read an article. I don't want to do it. I don't want to relive any of it. I don't want to know why.
I didn't read Michael's recap.
I did, and it confused me. But I'm not a smart man. Very many astrological words and lots of capital letters.
But, you know, you made a point in your quick cast that I didn't even think about because I'm so in love with this team. But that's damn near fireable for Nick Holt.
Yes.
I mean, a lesser beloved defensive coordinator, like any of Purdue's previous defensive coordinators going back to, I don't know, SPAC, would have been fired for that or should have been. People would have been calling for it. I'm surprised we haven't seen more criticism. So, I mean, you think Holt's back, right, next year?
Absolutely. I don't think there's any doubt. It's funny. I'm sitting at my desk. I just pulled up the notes here of my pregame quick cast, my three big questions that I did on the fly for Twitter. I just found this. There's my
nice.
That morning, that was right before I was about to drive down to Nashville. And those questions don't matter right now. And the I can tell one of the answers. Will Jeff Brohm's bull dominance continue? No. It's the answer.
The Purdue kryptonite overcomes many strengths. This is a guy who wins 10 or 12 games every year and wins his bowl game, never loses in November. And he still wins a lot in November at Purdue. I will say he still seems to have that magic.
Big clip.
But, you know, I got a razzing email from a coworker who went to Iowa, and he said he wasn't too bad. I mean, it was fair. He said, well, I said, you'll love it then, because he knew I was going to the hockey game down there too. And he said, I hope that the Rangers can salvage your trip. And he said, because I'll tell you, suddenly Jeff Brom's not looking like the threat in the West that he did an hour ago. And I want to be like, well, he may not be a threat in the West, but Kirk Ferentz is still 0-2 against him, right?
Right? Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I don't – that's like, you know, Notre Dame fans like chirping that, it, you know, that Georgia and UCF proved they didn't belong in the playoff. Like, no, Notre Dame, you don't get to say anything. You are a fraud again.
Yeah.
Yet again. So, the other thing. Purdue went 6-7, which I think we can agree is a pretty middling season and beneath the expectations of where we think this
program. It's not a good season. You're
right.
It's not good.
But do you know what it is? It is – that has only been bettered by IU football once in the last quarter century. So when you see those little chirps, yes, Purdue got smoked. And if you're not a fan of Purdue, you should probably have enjoyed that. That was a tough day. But I'd still rather be where we're at.
Absolutely. And I'm still going to get season tickets next year. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, next it didn't, it, yeah, it's going to be fun.
I mean, next year I've already heard
nine wins is my early predictor.
I made you guys give some early thoughts before the bowl game, as part of the Predicto email, and others, people outside the BS, you know, I think your brother is one of the people. I think there's a lot of people thinking, 8-10 range is not crazy next year at all. Crazy.
No, it's not.
And that means you all think that the West is in play. So
the West is definitely in play. The West is definitely in play. For some reason, I just think like this Paul Chryst experiment crashes down at some point where everybody figures out he's actually a puppet. You know, like there's Alvarez's hand is stuck places it shouldn't be. Making him just say things. I don't know. I don't think he is Barry Alvarez. I checked on that before the show and turns out right. He is not Barry Alvarez. And so I don't, it's the same thing to me. They've got the same things happening in basketball and football right now where you have the next guy after a legend who's not the legend. He's not that good, but somehow the media still believes that they're the same program. They're not, they're just not. Sorry. I don't know. They're awfully good.
Yeah, Ethan Happ is 11th year of eligibility.
Yeah, Ethan Happ is, and every year have we been hearing the exact same words out of the exact same media hacks about how great he is, and he's a player of the year candidate again. Just back off that garbage, okay? Players of the year should be able to shoot outside of 4 feet, I believe. that's just my opinion, and I'm not a guy who writes for a living, but that is my opinion. It is truly a shame that the last game of the season was such a bad one, but like I said in the quick cast, there positives can come out of this, and I really believe that. I would much rather be a Purdue fan than an IU fan. So
heck yeah.
Period.
Heck yeah. So what do we want to wind it down on? We didn't talk to readers this week because it was a little bit more of a somber episode. But I think, do you look at the season? I think this season, you know, it's a lot harder to answer the old question about, like, you know, how do you view the season? Was it a success? Was it not? Because of the emotion involved. I think it's going to be a season you'll never forget. I think, you know, I think, tell me if this is crazy. I think it'll be referred to as like the Tyler season someday. I think you look back and you'll be like, that Tyler game, that night, that is what, and you know what, 6-7, I don't care. They had the fact that we all got to experience that night, some of us there, some of us not there, but it felt like, I remember Anish saying that is his favorite. He said recently, that's his favorite sports memory right now. And he said, and I wasn't even there. Right. And it's like, that's a great way of putting it. Like I wasn't there. And I don't know that I've ever enjoyed something more. And it wasn't just the enjoyment and the joy of it. It was the catharsis and the you felt emotionally drained after that. It wasn't just a win, it was the way it happened, the circumstances, the fact that so many people were swept up in it. That is of course what is gonna, you know, you're not gonna remember a lot about this season. You can remember the players, and largely it's gonna be because of their connection to Tyler, right? I mean, the way that those guys were carried in a way and motivated.
I predicted a loss for Purdue in that game. Just FYI, I can remember.
I think we all did.
I predicted a loss.
I think
we all did too.
My 9-year-old loved when the Rose Bowl was coming on to say, Ohio State 12-1, still just one loss. And I was like, that's right, bud. Just one. That's one, Irvin. Too bad you didn't make the playoff because you got mollywomped. And the thing is, they probably would make the playoff if they hadn't been demolished by Purdue. Like,
yeah.
And they showed they probably should have been in the playoff.
They were good.
But the cost of getting beaten by a 500 team by a million is high.
Didn't he throw like 50 touchdowns or something ridiculous?
Yes. He passed Drew Brees' record, I think, is what they said at some point. So there's amazing things happened.
They were so good.
They were so good. They were very good.
Oh, my gosh.
And the funny thing, like, I liked it. Like, I would just tune into Ohio State game random times after the Purdue Ohio State game, and they'd say, well, you know, these Ohio State defensive backs, they are salty. They can hit. They're good tacklers, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, not that one night. Like, I could, you know, right? You just, I mean, I think one little tiny dude beat like four of them. That's all that's fresh in my mind.
Well, not just one tiny dude.
But that one play.
A couple, well,
four DBs right there, right?
But that's the one we think about. But another one that we talked about on the podcast right after that was DJ Knox had
planting his foot.
Long runs where he just juked those five-star DBs out of their pants.
Yep.
And outran them. He's not supposed to be faster than them.
No, he's not.
Not over 50, 60 yards. He's not supposed to be faster than all those guys.
Yeah, yeah. There's in one of the bowl games, I can't remember which team it was, but they've got a diminutive running back that was a lot like DJ Knox. Like, he's similar size and similar speed. He's probably not as stout. Gosh, I wish I could remember which game it was. Cincinnati. Cincinnati has a running back that's a lot like DJ Knox. And but he's not DJ Knox. That guy, I love that guy. Love DJ.
Won 11 games this year, and I don't know if you noticed, but Kentucky won 10 games. Mm-hmm. So all I'm saying is it can be done. We've never seen it, but it can be done.
It happens. That's right.
I want a 10-win season. Have I made that clear in the past?
You have made it clear, and now I think you're going to get it in the next few years. I think you're going to see it as a Purdue fan.
Being that relevant that late in the season.
It might be in the next 2 years.
In a bowl game on, say, January 1st?
Man. I don't think 10 wins next year. I think maybe 2 years. 9 wins next, 10 after that.
I'm excited already. I'm ready to start it.
That's where I'm leaning.
Season now. This is what I said last year, remember?
Let's go. Yes.
And one other somewhat closing thought on Jeff Brohm. I don't think it can be another thing that I don't think can be overstated, the job he's done to be 13-13 in 2 years. He took a program that was, I mean, I think you've said this, right? Ashes and dearth of talent and nowhere on recruiting reputation, right? With coaches in high schools and, you know, there was no area that they sort of owned.
Right.
And he's taken largely Hazel guys, right? And that's a huge job. Just not that there wasn't talent, because there was, but to change the mindset to the way it is now, that they, I know they only went 6-7, but this that squad against that schedule under Hazel would have been like a 1-win team,
right?
Like, no, I don't know where the wins would come from, right? You know, and
on Saturday we'll have the next big piece of this recruiting class. We'll probably make it official, and one of the worst kept secrets, it sounds like. As Bell will tell the world that he's coming to Purdue as well, it seems. It looks like all signs point to this. But that'll be a fun day. That'll be neat on Twitter. By the way, I want to say something, because you were talking about Twitter reaction after the Purdue loss. Okay. And I know you get on social media. You don't have any problem with getting on it. I can tell you, I did not get on Twitter at all that day. I think my record would show that I did not get on Twitter. I don't think I got on Instagram at all. And I want to tell people out there who love social media that it is possible. This is just like you saying, it is possible for a team that's not a blue blood to win 10 games. And this is a similar possibility. It is possible for human beings not to get on. So let's pretend for a second, if I was out in front of my house yelling,
Using my analogy.
Huh? What'd you say?
Using my analogy about Twitter, screaming.
Screaming in a cornfield. I love it. Screaming in a cornfield. So I go out in front of my house and I yell, okay, because I am bald, okay, but I yell, all bald people are stupid, okay? And let's pretend for a second you live 10 miles away. You didn't have to hear it, right? I said it in public. You didn't have to hear it, right? If you would have come to my house and said, this guy's going to say something inflammatory about bald people, right? You knew inflammatory things were going to be said about your Boilermakers after that game. Not you. I'm not talking about you because you're fine. Sure. But there are people that then they're getting more and more angry. Just don't go on there, guys. It's okay. You're not less of a person.
You have to go hourly at a minimum.
That's right. You have to go. You
might miss something.
That's it. The fear of... What, that's a new FOMO. One. Fear of missing out. FOMO.
You never know. But you're right. Like, that's the reason you and I are both long gone from Facebook. It's a time suck that once you realize you're not missing out on anything, or what you're missing out on is actually wonderful to miss out on, you're like, what am I going to do with all this found time? I may volunteer.
Coming back to tie a bow on it. That's it. Right? Let's do something good. I mean, the funny thing is when Jay and I have both done it, many of you who are still listening, God bless you again. Hey, you've seen us battle people on Twitter. And guess what? We did not get a belt for that battle. We did not get a check for that battle.
I enjoy it sometimes.
I know you do. But we didn't earn anything, sadly. I earned respect, boy.
We all know who won. Come on, let's be honest. well, to that point, when I talked about doing something, you know me, and one of my things that I can't stand is social media activism. And people have a different opinion on this. I've heard people make cogent arguments that there's some validity to certain things, but like the idea of like, I changed my profile picture to the Eiffel Tower after violence in Paris. Like, You didn't do anything.
You didn't do anything.
Yeah. So don't post something about, we need to stop violence. Like, okay.
Yes, I agree.
Right. Like, no one disagrees with you. Like,
hate is bad. Yes. Everyone except
I said it on Facebook.
Agrees.
So now, problem solved.
Nothing. Yeah, exactly.
You like, do something though. Volunteer, do something. Make a difference. Try to make a difference that actually requires something other than your phone. That's my PSA for the evening.
What if you beat up on a guy that's trying to take an old lady's purse with your phone as the weapon?
Well, what if you broke it? Then you couldn't get on Twitter for a while.
And tell people what the good thing you just
done. Those are always my favorite. That's like when people take pictures of themselves, like at a, you know, donating food to a soup kitchen. It's like, and look at you taking a picture of it. Like,
I donated one bottle of water. It costed a nickel. I didn't have to. I went 2 miles to donate it.
I think we've veered off topic. So we'd like to thank our season-long sponsor, martinvintage.com. Martin Vintage, I should say. And you can find them at martinvintage.com. And to this day, they're always doing specials, by the way. Yeah. So keep an eye on them. They're starting to get more active on Twitter, which I'm glad to see that. but they do specials all the time with free shipping and all sorts of great deals. And they always honor Boiled at checkout. Enter that as your coupon code and you'll get 20% off. It's a legit deal. 20% is not nothing, man. Right. It's money. It's money you're not spending. It's wonderful. And
I think it's crazy. Before Christmas, people would say, hey, I just did this and I went on Martin Vintage and people were showing us this. Mm-hmm. I don't think they were doing it to brag about, but they'd buy like 7 shirts, 5 shirts. I'm like, that adds up.
You're like, okay, money bags.
That's right. No, I can't do that.
I have to wear the same shirt and then turn it inside out the next day.
Yep.
Well, so we thank them. We thank all of you who've listened all season. We're not going away. I'm sure we'll be back, but we're not talking. We're recording this on Thursday evening. I'll try to get this posted on Friday. We specifically didn't talk about the Purdue-Iowa basketball game tonight that Purdue really looked good for most of it. But we're going to leave that for the basketball beat.
Yeah, those guys are all over it.
Yeah, very timely with their recording. So stand by for that. I'm sure they're probably cutting one right now.
Right now, exactly.
Yeah, I'm
sure. They surprised us with the last one. I'll be honest. I listened. It was quite good. That's the thing. They are good when they decide to do it.
Well, when it's like Michael's posts. Michael, his post, his Tyler Trent post has gotten the most accolades and well-deserved. It's very good of any of ours. Mm-hmm. But when you only write like two or three posts a year.
You're saving up all those
You're
words.
Bound to be full of some good stuff because you've been bottling it all up, right?
Like, right.
It's when you write 60, 70, 80 posts a year. It's maybe more. I don't even know. It gets, I lose track. Yeah. You know, it's hard to maintain that excellence.
Yep. I get fatigued. But it's good. At least doing something again. It's good.
Good for you, Michael.
Yeah. Jay, been a great season. And I am sorry that I was right because I wanted you to be right about Purdue winning 100 football games this year.
Look. Look, when they started 0-3, then won three games, then the Ohio State game happened, right?
Right.
And I know that night when they were 4-3, you were like, holy crap, he could actually still be right.
It was a weird season because there were times where we were like, whoa, look at the next couple games. These are the winnable ones.
Ooh, I remember a podcast we did when they were about 4-3 or whatever it was, 5-4 maybe, and you were like, oh, they're going to win like 8 games because you were looking at the end of the season and you were like, they're going to win out, and that because you believe they're going to be Wisconsin, which they should have.
Yep, I believe they're going to be Minnesota. I believe
they're going to beat IU and Minnesota and a bowl game, and you're like, holy crap, they could still get to 8 or 9 very easily.
Right.
And then, thanks, Louisville. I think that, we didn't talk about this at all.
Oh, you kidding me?
That threw a wrench in the season, right? There's no way that Minnesota game goes that way if Purdue's focused. I mean, let's be honest.
Let's put a comparison something everybody can relate to right now. If you took time off during Christmas, which pretty much everybody did, and then you had to go back to work yesterday, which everybody did, you probably felt like you've never done that job before. I can tell you, I was like, what is this in front of
What's
me?
What's my password?
Well, I don't know any password. When the Brohm stuff happened, there was a lot of distraction that really wasn't about football, right?
Oh, yeah.
For everybody. And then they played like that. And...
Boo. Yeah.
Boo Louisville, boo Vince Tyra, boo City of Nashville.
No, City of Nashville was fun.
I mean, yay, City of Nashville. Traffic like New York City, but in the South. Is that their slogan? Is that what they say? Because that's a really good.
All right, I think we've done enough damage for this season. Thanks again.
Tyler, we love you. Good night.
Yeah, man. Good night.
And so, I can't promise that that's how the Lord's going to work in everyone's life. But I'd say, it's really important just to listen to other people and take time out of your day to sacrifice your time to listen to other people, because not only can they encourage you through their battles, but and through things that they're suffering through, but you can also encourage them just through taking time to listen to them, because you never know what other people are going through.